struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thursday morning in New York City. Glad to have you along. Something just strange happened to me. I was standing on the corner a few blocks away, waiting to get my tea, and I heard this really odd sound. You know, I heard it again. And the third time, I was like, what can that be? That can't be a human. But then again, it's New York, so you never discount oddness, eccentric people, noises, things, events. And I'm like, but that is really strange. So then all of a sudden, a bus moved, and then I saw what was emanating from this animal. It was a horse. So, you know, you don't really expect a horse sometimes, even though there are some of them around Midtown, leaseback. I think they call them, what's the exact term? Anyway, they're horseback mounted police. But it was so strange to hear this in this cacophony of jackhammers, busy New York City traffic, and more. Anyway, it was interesting. Refreshing sound of spring. My name is Mark Farrell. The show's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. 1 minute past the hour of 11 o'clock. Beautiful day here. Well, I don't know. I'm an optimist. It's kind of nice. But the next few days, including Easter and Passover, are not looking that great. If you're in the South, I'm going to be heading toward you. Getting in a car tomorrow morning, heading down south to D.C., I'm going to see the Newseum. If you've never seen a Newseum, spelled N-E-S-E-U, I just screwed it up, N-E-W-S-U-E-M, I think I screwed it up again, is a phenomenal place. It's my new favorite place in D.C., but unfortunately it's going to be moving, so I want to see it before it moves again, because it's the history of the news. And just to give you an example of how neat it is, when you walk in the front door, they have all, depends on what time of the day you're there, say if you're there at 11 o'clock in the morning, they have all the headlines of the national and international newspapers, physical papers, right there. So it's kind of interesting, number one, to see the different pictures, etc., and what the headlines go with, and also the different slants. Because, of course, in the world that we live in, it's perspective, it's the governed country that it's coming from. So it's very interesting. So anyway, after D.C., after I take out my nephew for a nice lunch, dinner, whatever, we're going to head down to Raleigh-Durham and then ultimately down to Myrtle Beach and hang out for a week with the kids and have a great time, unwind, go down that rabbit hole known as spring break. And we're going to have a great show today, as we always do, and always love to hear your feedback, 888-874-4888. You're going to meet a fine gentleman and learn about a great organization. Marcus Sutra is president of Eye to Eye, and it's great about Eye to Eye because it's about self-advocacy and life. And no matter what you do, you know, you have to be a stand-up person. And it's about sharing experiences. And this national award-winning mentoring program for students with learning and attention issues does just that. They train high school and college students with learning differences, including dyslexia, ADHD, and they teach them to mentor similarly identified middle school students. And the most impressive part about this is Eye to Eye is run by and for people with learning and attention issues. That's what it's about. Walk the walk, talk the talk. Something like that. I'm screwing up all my sayings this morning. At least I'm consistent, man. So a few things before we meet Marcus. By the way, it sounds like it's going to be the Mark and Marcus show today, which is a good thing. He's a fine man. BB Rexha. You know her as a pop singer, actress, kind of actress. If she sticks with singing, I'd be better off. She'd be better off. Came out yesterday that she announced that she has bipolar disorder. And actually, the first thing is, you know, why do they call it disorder? Why can't it just be bipolarness? Bipolar. Disorder always connotates a negative term. Anyway, leading into that, you know where I'm going. I'm a staunch advocate for mental health, and I applaud her, and I applaud everybody, as I always do, for putting a personal label out there for people to understand it's okay to be bipolar. It's okay to have anxiety, depression, you name it, the diagnosis, it's okay. Whatever the mental health diagnosis is, it's okay. You're not alone, because there are millions of people out there that are diagnosed, and there are millions of people who are not diagnosed and who just live in privacy. And that's okay. If you want to live in privacy, that's all fine. But if we want to remove the stigma even more, chip away at it day by day, which I think we've made great strides in the last 10 years with, continue to do so. And I think social media, when it's done properly, for example, yesterday, I think Bebe Rexha's announcement was done well, executed well, and her story about her just feeling different. And that's kind of the theme for today's topic, about feeling different. I felt different all through school. Never fit in well academically, socially, because of my permanent visual impairment. They couldn't cure my eyesight, my vision. So when we speak to Marcus Sutra from Eye to Eye, he's going to talk about how differences come together. There's power in being different. And don't be ashamed. Don't feel like you have to be that person in the corner, left behind. No, 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 no. My mantra is, my difference makes me stronger. And just like Bebe Rexha, putting it all out there, saying that she didn't want to leave her apartment or her house, didn't want to socialize, didn't want to be with people. And that's going to impact some peers, some people. They're going to say, you know what, I realize these conditions and I feel the same way. And maybe I have to go see somebody. Maybe I need to seek professional help. So every time someone comes forward on this platform, luminary, celebrity, politician, your neighbor, it gives someone else a foothold, a grasping point to understand, if anything, they're going to get educated about. For example, when I post something on social media about speaking at a college on mental health, about suicide, anxiety, depression, or about drugs and alcohol, my history. As a matter of fact, I gave an interview the other day. It's going to come out, and I'll talk about it in the coming weeks, in a newspaper, for a newspaper. And I told them that my first chapter of my book is called, what is it called? Just blanked on it. Man, I got to stop getting up at 3:30 in the morning to teach spin. Yikes. Anyway, it starts out, I'm in an elevator. I'm in a shaft. Oh, it's called the shaft. I'm in an elevator shaft on top of an elevator because on the way home from a frat party, completely inebriated, I thought it would be more genius to ride on top of an elevator than inside an elevator, the conventional way. Yeah, completely not considering the safety of everyone in the elevator, myself, not even know if there's enough room at the top of the shaft. Anyway, I survived. But it's about understanding your difference and how we act and how we can be our best and how we can perform at our peak and how we can ascertain success, whatever that success is defined by each and every one of us. So with Bebe, it's great. And along with everybody else, I mean, you think about it, go back to Ronald Reagan. He's kind of the first one as a public figure in my mind, in my young, not so young mind, that when I think about putting your personal medical condition out there, Alzheimer's, Ronald Reagan, he put that on the map. Anyway, so it's great to, I'm certainly not happy that she has this condition, but I'm happy that certainly she's going to be properly treated and she's going to continue to do her art. And that's the other thing is, though, you know, when you have a mental health condition, a lot of people find that it can really prosper them in many ways, in a creative way, in an effective implementation way, in terms of being high strung and working. Sometimes, obviously, with the bipolar, it's manic. And the different swings can be rough. But when you're in a high swing mode, you know, you can accomplish a lot. And a lot of great artists and musicians, modern day and certainly in past day, we all have read about them. We've seen movies and you know, dating hundreds of years ago and back, what they've contributed to our cultural aspect all over the world. So it's very interesting to think about that. Mueller report. It's 11 o'clock, so it's public, maybe public record. I think it was going over to Congress on a CD. By the way, what year is it? 2019, he's bringing over a CD to Congress. That says we're in trouble right there. I mean, come on. Anyway, so it's going to be interesting, the redacted version, what comes out. It's going to be a whole, you know what I mean, a blank show. And it's going to be interpreted five different ways from Sunday. Five ways? 5,000 different ways, I should say. But Attorney General Barr is going to be having a press conference, if he has not already. And I believe our fine president is going to be having one as well. And I'm sure he's going to be touting the findings. So we had a guest on the show here a couple of weeks ago, Kirsten Corley. Kirsten's a fine human being, and she works for Covenant House. And we spoke about homelessness in New York City and in New Jersey, more where her expertise lies. And they had a sleep out in Newark, N-E-W-A-R-K, Newark, New Jersey, which is about 30 miles west of Manhattan. And she's hosting, Covenant House, I should say, is hosting another sleep out in May. I believe it's May 17th in Asbury Park. Asbury Park is a very unique town. It's a seaside town about 50 miles south of Manhattan. It was really in its heyday in the 50s and 60s, a real go-to destination for New York City folks, a real resort town, beautiful, beautiful colonial homes, sprawling lawns on the ocean. I mean, city side, beach side, it was just really breathtaking. I remember actually as a kid, they had Easter bonnet. I don't know if it was called an Easter bonnet parade, but people would go down there and the ladies with Easter bonnets would just be, I mean, just huge. I'm surprised they wouldn't tip over. Anyways, a very, very historic town. And then it went through riots, race riots and everything. But it became to become known as like a rock epicenter of New Jersey and actually nationally and worldwide. Bruce Springsteen has hung his hat there, Southside Johnny, and an endless array, John Bon Jovi, endless array of artists, and really big icons, music icons, and it's a phenomenal town. Anyway, it's gone through its highs and lows, ebbs and flows, and in the last 15 years, it's been on a final uptick because it's really made the swing for progress, and I'd say about a third of the town has been completely renovated. And it's just a big success story. Cultural, talking about live music, talk about restaurants, art, music and every in terms of instructional performance, bar, cabaret, dance. It's just a bustling hub for millennials, for people 50 years old, older, younger. It's just a cacophony of artistry and sound that you just really want to be a part of. So the next sleep out for Covenant House is going to be there on May 17th. And I will be sleeping on the streets of Asbury Park for that night. I believe it starts at 7 o'clock at night, or no, 8 o'clock at night till 7 in the morning. And I believe I get, I don't know if this is truth or if I just made a joke out of this to my kids. I've said I may be getting a cardboard box and a sleeping bag, which if you're homeless, is pretty rock solid if you have a sleeping bag. And you want the cardboard box because even if it's summertime out, concrete or tar or macadam is cold. So you want that little bit of a buffer. So that's why I make a joke, make light out of this. But that's really what the cardboard's for. So it's going to be a great experience. I'm going to report back about my findings. I'm going to do a segment. I'm going to be interviewing my fellow sleep outers, if there's such a term, and video, audio, and everything, report back to you, and we'll have a nice segment. And to find out what it's like, because I said when I had Kirsten, and I don't want to talk too much about this, I want to get to Marcus in a few moments, but I want to find out and deliver first. Now, for me to be sleeping out, does it really depict and reflect what it is to be homeless? Of course not. But the reality is a lot of Americans are on the verge of being homeless. Maybe they're 3, 6 months, 8 months, 10 months away from being homeless. Lose your job. Go through your savings. It can be as easy as that. Go through a bad separation, a divorce, lose your job, etc. We've seen movies about this. We've heard stories about this. But the reality is we're all not that far, if you think about it, in terms of losing a mortgage. And of course, you could probably stay in a house for a year before you get evicted and the marshals come up and put padlocks on the door, etc. But, you know, it can happen that easily, how life changes. So it's great. It's a great learning lesson for me. I've done this in a different caliber. I've slept in a homeless shelter before inside where I served dinner and breakfast, which I mentioned during a segment about 2 or 3 weeks ago, which you can find on the Insight page. But this is a little bit different, actually sleeping on the streets. And it's a great depiction and role model for my children to see that. And I actually had a conversation with my wife and kids yesterday saying, listen, kids, because they're getting a little soft, meaning soft like they're expecting a little bit too much. And we're not one of these parents who are bulldozer parents and or provide and just give them everything at the drop of a hat. As a matter of fact, someone in my family, a dear cousin of mine who's a farmer and just a great salt of the earth kind of guy, came over the other day with one of those scooters, you know, those scooters like razors, but this one has a motor on the back of it. And he goes, hey, I brought this to my granddaughter, but she's not into it. And it's probably a couple $100s. But money aside, I said, you know what? No, I can't take this. He goes, what do you mean? I said, you know what? Just bring it back to your house. I'll bring my kids over to the farm. They're going to pick up some twigs. They're going to do something. It's like, Mark, just take it. They're just kids. I'm like, yeah, they're just kids. And look at you. You grew up on a farm with nothing, absolutely nothing. And you're a millionaire farmer. You don't need to farm. You farm as a hobby. And so all this corn to Purdue, you farm because you love it. But you have all this because you have a work ethic that's emblematic of what we should all have in America and the world. Take pride in what we do. So does it start at a young age? Absolutely. I believe 1,000% so. Just like when we speak to Marcus from Eye to Eye about learning to be comfortable in our skin and what we need to do that and accomplish that so we can thrive in our hobbies, thrive in our studies, thrive in our profession when we become old enough, when the consumers that they serve become old enough to prosper in that way. So I do believe it starts at a very, very young age. So going back to the sleep app, I think it's a great example of, you know, showing my kids that what I have, I don't take for granted. And we never, ever discourage or make fun of someone who has less. And lastly, before we meet Marcus, I want to talk about how an impactful statement a coach can make. I coach two teams and have been doing it for a few years, soccer teams. My daughter's 6-year-old team and my son's 9-year-old team. And I want to point out just a few quick things. Number one, that every season you kind of have a mixed bag of kids. And maybe there's like maybe two kids besides my son that is on my team that I know their history because I've coached them before. And it's a great eye-opening experience. Number one, yes, the skill set, et cetera, the sport is a no-brainer. But the actual aspect of conduct is more of what I want to hone in on. Because different personalities, ADD, ADHD, which we'll be talking about momentarily as well. But all these different personalities come together and sometimes they don't work together. Or sometimes I don't know about a person's special needs, even though we ask of it, the league asks for special information. Or when I put out my email to parents welcoming them to my team and say, listen, please feel free to text me, call me, have a private conversation. I am all about doing whatever I can to help your child succeed, your soccer star succeed. So this has happened a few different times and no one's reached out to me. And I think, okay, no one's special needs. I think everyone has a disability in life because it's whether it's real or perceived, we all have some limitation. And so, of course, it rears its ugly head in some shape or form. And so one of the things happened the other day. This is more of an emotional issue. I have a really big kid on the team. He's very strong and powerful. But emotionally, he's very, very fragile. Extremely fragile. Like if I don't look at him probably with a smile, I feel like I'm going to offend him. And so yesterday in the warm-up, we were doing a practice drill where someone's doing a corner kick. And this is just warm-up against our own team. The kid, amazingly so, miraculously so, from the corner of the field, put the ball into the goal because when it landed, it had a spin on it and spun right into the goal. And he was in goal, the kid I'm talking about who's sensitive. And he started crying. And this is before the game. So I said to him, hey, come on over here. Let's talk. And he's like, I can't play goal. I know you wanted me to play goal in the second half. But I said, well, you don't have a choice because I need you. The team needs you. And I do the whole thing about teamwork. And the reason why I mention this to you is because we all need pillars in our life. We all need scaffolding in our life, people around us that keep us strong, that when we start to crumble or break or whatever metaphor you want to use, that are there for us. And so when we think about coaches, you know, we don't want to think about, and there's a lot of them out there that just yell and scream, come on, work harder, work faster, don't be a blank or don't think like this. And, you know, it's all about, you know, 100% effort. And yes, that's true. But it's all about taking time out and listening to somebody. And someone said something to me years ago, and this is resonating with me for a long, long time and will for my life. You're never as tall as when you kneel down to listen to a child. And it's so true. because it's not about talking. It's about listening. So I know this kid's fears. He's completely fearful. And guess what? I stuck him in the second half. I cajoled him into doing it. More of like, you're doing me a favor, I owe you one type of thing, wink, wink. And guess what? He blew it away. The kid was phenomenal. If he wasn't in goal, I imagine we lost last night 3-1. We would have probably been down probably 5 more points easily. I mean, he's made some incredible, incredible saves. And the ones he didn't save, no one on the team could have saved him. I don't think I would have been likely to save them either in my prime. And so I have another individual. As a matter of fact, at the conclusion of the game, did something very, very unsportsmanlike. We line up against the other team, and we shake our hands, and we go down the line. Basically, each team crosses each other. Good game, good game, good game. And those are two words, only two words I say that you can say to each other. Thank the refs, the other team coaches, etc. And then one player in front of me was sticking out his shoulder, actually bumping into the other shoulders. And I'm thinking, like, is this a new thing, like a kid thing? Like, hey, I'm cool. This is a status thing or whatever. And I realized, no, this is not. So I said, hey, come here. And he wasn't listening to me. So I was really, really perturbed. Because not only is this incredibly unacceptable action by him, but it reflects very poorly on the team and me as a coach. So I pulled him aside and I said to him, what's going on? And he wouldn't talk to me because he was irate. So I said to him, listen, this is not sportsmanlike conduct. You are not going to act like this on this team. Very, very uncool. Will not tolerate it. So he's going to lose the game. He's one of the best players on the team. And I have an assistant coach, a second assistant coach who just kind of joined the team the other day, and it was his son. I looked at him and said, sorry. And he said, no, you did the right thing. But my point is, and I want to touch on this another time, but I want to get on to it a little further, because the difference somebody can make in your life, a mentor. What is a coach? Is a coach giving you instruction on how to play a sport, how to become better at something? Yes. But what is the role of a mentor? The same thing in life. Right? We need guidance. You know, I just lost a mentor in radio. A gentleman who was pivotal to me for years. Unfortunately, passed on a few weeks ago. But I mean, just an amazing, amazing man. We all need somebody to offer sage advice or ask us the right questions for us to ask ourselves. Right? I mean, we don't have all the answers. And I don't want the answers from somebody else. And I want to be able to come up on my own, or at least take credit for the ones I steal. I'm just kidding. Anyway, food for thought. So, you know, it takes a tribe. It takes a community. It takes a village. You know, so keep that in mind. So whenever you want to volunteer or help out a kid on your block, whether it's helping them learn how to put a chain back on a bicycle or fix a flat, or maybe algebra, whatever the case may be. It's 22 minutes after the hour at 11 o'clock. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for joining me today and every week. My name is Mark Farrell. We can always be found at Insight on the Insight page on PRN.fm. We are Facebook Live, and you can see how handsome our next guest is and meet Marcus Sutra. He's the president of Eye to Eye. Eye to Eye is a national award-winning mentoring program for students with learning and attention issues. Marcus, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Now, wait a minute. You're not ready yet. 22 minutes to get ready. Now you're putting headphones on and getting up to the microphone?
Sorry.
Come on, my friend.
I thought you were
going
to give me a cue of some kind.
I was talking about you. I thought that was kind of a cue.
Yeah. Sorry. I told you I'd have a learning disability, didn't I?
Well, so. You know what it is? I guess your smart device didn't tell you, because this morning when you walked in, you said, well, your umbrella told you. Your smartphone said you need to bring an umbrella today.
Yes, it does. I listened to my technology.
So it didn't tell you Mark's going to be prompting you soon.
Yeah, it didn't tell me that. Sorry.
Well, welcome to the show, and to be part of an organization, first and foremost, that helps people feel more comfortable in their own skin. Because having a visual impairment, you know, I didn't feel comfortable in school. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the bane of my existence. And I'm sure you have a similar story to a certain extent. But there is a community that was evolved back in 1989?
98.
That you're going to tell us about at Brown University, where a bunch of students, college students, came together and realized, yeah, we all have differences, and those differences, you know, run the gamut. But you know what? Let's come together and have strength in our differences and help others.
Exactly. Well said. And I really loved your intro and talking about mentoring and service and giving back, because it's such an important piece and is really fundamental to the work that Eye to Eye is doing. I to your story, just to touch on mine for a second, I mean, I was one of those students who was identified with a learning disability, dyslexia and ADHD. I use that word identified really specifically. I prefer that word over a diagnosed. You know, it was not something I caught from my lab partner. It was not something that, you know, suddenly one day walked home with.
That's another interview.
Yeah, completely different issues. But it was something that I was born with. This was the way I was born, and it was just, you know, it took till third grade for school to kind of identify that I was having some issues when it came to reading and processing information, spelling, and you know, sitting still and kind of behaving. So there was, you know, millions of kids all over the country who were having this type of experience, and I, along with David and others that were kind of part of the first generation to be given these labels. You know,
you're referring to COO David Flink.
Yes, CEO. Yeah, David Flink. So yeah, David and I were part of that first generation. These kind of the older millennials who were the Ritalin generation were identified. Were in special ed, kind of a part of that experience. So we came out of that experience seeing not a community. Not a lot of role models, and a lot of just kind of misinformation as to what the experience was actually like for students. And
did that title ever bother you? And how does it sit with you today? Special education.
I think that it's interesting. As a kid, it was tough. It was not something that was empowering at all. And I immediately found that it was, you know, a thing that led to bullying, it led to being ostracized, led to not feeling like school was a place where I was safe. But at the same time, I think it was a lot about the orientation, because if somebody had said, you know, kind of oriented as like, this is a place where they're trying to support you, you're trying to learn, like you learn a little bit differently than the other kids in the class, and these teachers have been specially trained to help you. If it had kind of that more of an orientation, it's the way I see it now as somebody who went through teacher training and worked in schools for years. I think I would have looked at it really differently, and I look at it differently now. But at the time, it was being different when you're 10 is not cool.
Absolutely. I mean, the segregation aspect alone just makes you feel entirely different. And you just hit the nail right on the head, because it's couched entirely different now.
Yeah.
And that's everything. How you present anything in life, especially to students, is everything.
Right.
Because it could not be something that's great, but if you have a good teacher or someone who makes you feel empowered by saying, listen, we're going to give you additional time. You know, or whatever materials you need, or assistive technology. I mean, these are just gargantuan helpers.
Yeah, definitely. And the technology's evolved quite a lot since I was a kid as well, which is a big part of this. When I'm talking to parents and kids about this, I always think about the analogy of my eyeglasses as, like, when I was a kid, I hated wearing my eyeglasses. You know, it was something that just meant I was a nerd, all these types of things. And then
another label.
Yeah, another label. And exactly. And so then eventually now we've kind of changed. We flipped the script, and eyeglasses are cool. And the Warby Parkers of the world have made it nice to and smart to wear your glasses. But if
you probably don't even have a prescription in those.
No, I do.
I'm just ribbing you.
But I think that, like, that was a big piece, was like the way that the accommodations were framed, the way that the supports were framed as an admittance of a problem. Like if you use these things, if you use an audiobook, it means you can't read like everybody else. If, you know, you use extended time, it means you can't learn like everybody else. And that sets kids up a lot for failure.
Marcus Sutra, is there a national definition of learning disability?
This is one of those things that's kind of all over the map, because so many kids experience it in so many different ways. I mean, for dyslexia specifically, which is the most common learning disability, is a struggle with the written word, you know, struggling to see a sound, see a letter and return that into a sound. And that gives you struggles with spelling, comprehension, all of those types of things. ADHD is obviously more of a focusing issue. For me, I feel like I focus on almost everything, and it's just like kind of the selection of one or two things to really kind of focus my mind where I really struggle. I've used the analogy before that it's like somebody else has got the remote in their hand and they're like flying through the channels, and I'm like, hey, if we could just pick one thing here, I can focus on it, but my brain is kind of aware of all
things. It's like watching TV with your wife.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's a great analogy, Marcus. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it just kind of, and once we pick, you know, the Daily Show or whatever it is we're going to watch, we immediately, I'm ready to focus on it, and I can, but sometimes I feel like my brain's not in control of the remote.
Marcus, does, for yourself and for other people with ADHD, technology, multitasking, multiple windows open, does that put more gas on the fire, or is that a procedure in which you thrive?
For me, technology has been something I've kind of integrated into everything that I do. Like, joking with you this morning that Alexa told me to bring my umbrella. You know, I always, you know, whether it was embracing a calculator or audiobooks or text-to-speech, I listen, I read with my ears. I don't read with my eyes. And it took me till I was about 22 to kind of fully embrace that, that that was how my brain was wired. So me, I found it to be really, really helpful. But I do think that a lot of kids today, with like the constant distraction of like the endless Instagram feed, things like that, like I have to literally at my home, like my wife and I have like a no tech hour from like 8 to 10, basically those 2 hours of the evening, try and turn the phones off and escape from it, because it can, like anybody can kind of get sucked in. But with somebody with ADHD, it's even more of a struggle.
What about the model? Talk about the model of eye to eye, because the concept is great, because you have people from different backgrounds coming together, creating this macro idea and concept. But it's one thing to do that, but it's another entirely different thing to have a curriculum. And we'll talk about the specific programs. But did you decide on where you wanted to go in terms of the roadmap and who you wanted to help and what grade levels? Because obviously, you know, everyone needs a help, but where do you hone in your exact and precise audience?
Yeah, so when Dave was starting the organization as a student group at Brown, and I was actually teaching in a middle school, and we got paired up, and we were looking at our experience of being people with learning disabilities ourselves, and looking at the incredible failure rate of students with learning disabilities. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 50% of the students with LDs are suspended. You know, 1 in 3 are held back in
LD,
the grade.
Referring to learning disability.
Learning disability, thank you. 1 in 4 are showing signs of depression. 1 in 5 are dropping out of high school. So we were looking at what is the right intervention that we could provide as people who've lived this experience, beyond telling our stories, which we all know can be really impactful in terms of reducing stigma and kind of shedding light on the issue. But it was more about what can we provide. And at the same time that we were building Eye to Eye, there was a lot of emerging research coming out around social emotional learning. So this is teaching students how they learn, how to advocate for themselves, giving them a good sense of self, giving them role models, helping them with goal setting, this type of stuff that most of our school system is not designed to do. I never had a class on goal setting. I don't know if you did when you were in school. But we were thinking that those were really the things that were making the difference in our lives. And then there was all this emerging research, one specific study done by a guy named Marshall Raskins that looked at people over 20 years of their lifetime of having a learning disability. Tracked them basically from age 8, 9 into their late 20s, and said, what's making the difference in terms of them successfully launching into adulthood? And it was all these skills that I had just listed. It had very little to do with income or race or where you grew up or who your parents were. So we started, let's build a curriculum around that can reach these students. And let's organize people who have learning disabilities themselves so that they have that near peer role model, that experience of saying, hey, I've been there. I'm in college right now. This is the tips and tricks that I've used to make it. And we're going to do this, go through this curriculum and work through these issues together.
Absolutely. On so many different levels. I mean, first and foremost, you as a teacher, you know, you walk the walk. That's incredible. Now, did you teach special education or?
Social studies was what my background was in. And I went into school being like, I'm going to be the secret spy of dyslexia, you know, in the classroom.
Excellent.
And I'll get these kids on a really deep level. I'll know how to differentiate the instruction, whatever it is. And then about by the third day, I realized that when I couldn't spell anything on the board, that my kids figured out I was dyslexic, and that actually I had way more value in telling my story. And that was a real culture change tool. And that's really what led kind of the impetus of me getting involved with Eye to Eye, was it was like, wow, how could you scale that culture change experience I saw in that one?
And that's invaluable for them, Marcus, because we were talking about putting your story out there. As a matter of fact, I was relating to being interviewed the other day, and we're talking about disabilities and how far our nation has come in terms of acceptance. That's a great way for one class of students, 30 students, to understand what disability means. Doesn't mean it's a limitation that's going to keep you from being a social studies teacher in middle school. That's for
right.
Sure.
Exactly. I mean, I had kids saying to me, like, I didn't know teachers could be dyslexic. And I was like, some of the top greatest entrepreneurs and some of the most creative minds in our society are.
Your pilot that just took you on vacation for spring break could be dyslexic.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the guys who make Steven Spielberg, who makes some of the greatest movies ever, and Steve Jobs, who made the iPhone,
many
of our leaders in our country, Governor Gavin Newsom, just, you know, newly elected in California, proud dyslexic. So, and I could, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, Anderson Cooper, you could keep going. But, so there's these kind of incredible leaders in our society who are part of our community, and then we've got kids who are failing.
And the other thing that I want to comment on, Marcus, that you spoke about is the unbelievable impact somebody can have by just sitting there and sharing your story like you did with your students. All these different mentors from eye to eye going to different schools and the different mentor programs and saying, this is where I was, this is how I felt, and this is how I got to be who I am and where I am.
Yeah, and
definitely. I think that's invaluable. I never had anyone come to my school and speak about anything, being a goal setter, having a disability, realities, expectations, real life expectations, etc. And that's so invaluable. As a matter of fact, I read something funny on the internet the other day that said something like, oh, I know how to do some kind of trig concept, but I don't know how to do my own tax form.
Like, yeah, exactly.
We need to teach practical things in life.
Yeah. And, you know, learning is so much about your environment, right? So, like, this environment right now is a great way for me to learn. Having this conversation, learning from each other, this I don't feel disabled at all right now in this environment. But in a different environment, I may feel that way. And kids go from middle school to high school to college to the workplace, and they really need to know how they learn so that they can adapt to those different environments and be able to advocate for what they need. It's not like, you know, it goes away when you turn 18 or something like that. These issues are a part of your life forever. So to be able to fundamentally understand, okay, I need this to be able to learn. I need to be able to add this accommodation. I need a little extra support in this way. I mean, that's a skill anybody really needs to develop. But if you're a person with a learning disability, it's essential.
And have those confidence to be a self-advocate. And here's a great piece from Channel 13 where a solo dad introduces eye to eye, and it's a great insight look. Let's take a look.
The power of match mentors and mentees is also at the core of the next group success. Eye to Eye pairs middle school students with learning disabilities like dyslexia and ADHD with college and high school mentors who share similar learning disabilities.
Eye to Eye is a national mentor organization with chapters across the country in colleges and high schools. And it's an art-based mentoring program that takes students who have a learning disability or ADHD, and they're paired up with a middle school student with a similar disorder. And each week they do weekly art projects that help promote self-advocacy, help them see their strengths.
I have ADHD and I have dyslexia. I can talk to Ms. Danielle and I get to do exciting stuff because I really don't have nobody at home. Because my mom, she gotta go work, and when she get home usually, I don't have anything to do, so I just sit in my room.
I like working through this program because I get to meet tons of different people, even the other mentors, and I'm around people like me, so they think the same way, they learn the same way. Like, I get to hear like what she goes through, and like I wish that I had someone that could understand what I was going through schooling growing up, so I like talking to her and stuff like that.
I love you.
I love you too.
I hope that they are proud that they have a learning disability. I want to empower students so that they don't feel that having a learning disability is a weakness to have, but it really is a strength.
That says it all. That's phenomenal.
Well,
that exchange between the Temple mentor and the student, wow.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that video a few times, as you probably imagine, and yes. It every time kind of gets me. And it not only because of what the way the mentee is speaking, but the impact it's had on the mentor.
Yeah, the mentee in the beginning and does the narration. He just does a phenomenal job. And you can tell he's so passionate about it because, you know, obviously he went through the program and he just feels very empowered.
Yeah.
Marcus Sutra is my guest. He is the president of Eye to Eye. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Let's talk about some of the programs. You have Diplomat Speakers is one of them.
Yeah. So, our mentoring program works in about 180 schools around the country in 24 states.
Wow.
But we're constantly getting requests for students to come and bring their stories to schools, to assemblies. We've had students, so we developed a diplomat program where they go around and speak to, you know, raise awareness to schools, educate schools on how they can have a more positive culture for students with learning disabilities, how they can promote things like self-advocacy in their students. So these students have also spoken spoken at conferences. We just paired with NCLD, the National Center for Learning Disabilities, to do a whole Hill Day to help advocate for the RISE Act. So bringing the people who've lived this experience right in front of the policymakers and advocating for these needs. And during the Obama years, went to the White House many times to represent people with learning disabilities.
I'm sure you're well welcomed there.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. Michelle was just very welcoming and really was focused on specifically on the needs of students from low-income backgrounds, students with disabilities, and helping them achieve and go on to college.
And I think a vital component for Eye to Eye, of course, is the one-on-one, but online courses for persons with disabilities. And I spoke about this recently on the show here. I think it's invaluable because when you think about, I was working with a company back in 1997 when the internet was kind of really ramping up. And for I was thinking with somebody with a disability who's maybe a quadriplegic or living in the middle of nowhere, to be able to have connection, continuity with the world, it's just so empowering. But to be able to learn differently and do a course at your own pace is incredible.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And just to be able to understand that you're not alone. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something, you know, this is an invisible difference.
Camaraderie.
Yeah, and we're a hidden population. And so you have to get people, you have to empower the population to come out and tell their stories. Otherwise it's you're just pushing people into the closet.
Invisible disability.
Yeah.
Exactly. How many people or students actually take the online courses through Eye to Eye?
We have an app that we have for our program. So there's an app that you can download that's completely free. It's called II Empower. It's on the App Store. So it's kind of like a course. But it's more of a series of quests that the students go through that help them to understand how they learn, help them to advocate for themselves, help to identify the accommodations that would support them. So it's basically what we're doing in the art room in the schools around the country, but it's in your phone on an app.
Fantastic. And we should note that Eye to Eye is spelled EYE to TOEYE. Because of the person with a visual impairment may think it's all about me. It's all about low vision and blindness. Oh, awesome. Great. But it encompasses everything. And it was a great book by COO founder David Flank.
Yeah, yeah. David wrote a book because, you know, we wanted to be able to get our message to parents and be able to share the stories with them.
Because they're the whole steering mechanism.
Yeah. In many cases, like, you know, I was one of those. Yes, definitely. I was one of those kids who won the parent lottery, as I say, you know, and had the right parents to support me. And we didn't have a lot of money and a lot of that kind of stuff, but we did have like a lot of love and a lot of support, which was key. And so, you know, being able to kind of share some of the knowledge that Eye to Eye has gleaned over the years with parents is really amazing.
Were they educators?
My father was, yes. My father was a teacher for almost 40 years, just retired.
You think that was instrumental in them guiding you and promoting you and giving you what you needed to achieve?
Yeah, I think that was really, really key to it. And, you know, also I think was tough for him because I was not a great student, and he was a great student, you know. So there was that component to it as well. But I think that they knew the importance of education. Like, you know, I grew up in a house where you went to college because that's what you do after high school. And a lot of kids, that is not the case. And so to bring a college student or a high school student who's on their way into their lives and send that message of, hey, kids with learning disabilities go to college. And there's actually this whole office called the Disability Service Office that can give you the supports and all of the mechanisms that you need to succeed. I am constantly blown away by how many parents will say to me who've got 10, 12-year-olds, wait, you can get supports in college? You know, they literally just don't have the knowledge of what's
And they're usually located right on each college website.
Through the Disability Service Office is where you would plug into Eye to Eye. Yeah, yeah.
And another great component, I heard that you guys did a crazy spring break movie called like Eye to Eye Gone Wild.
I don't know if I knew about that.
But David did make a movie.
Yeah, we did do a film with PBS called Road Trip Nation, which Road Trip Nation is a series of films, and helped support that film along with Understood.org, which is an amazing site for parents looking for resources for their kids with learning intention
issues. And you had mentees involved as well, or alumni?
Alumni, yeah. So mentors, they go on a road trip around the country, meeting other notable dyslexics like Howie Mandel or Pete Denman, who's the guy who developed all the technology for Stephen Hawking to communicate.
Amazing stuff.
Incredible people, a great film, totally free online. Just type in "Being You" on Google or wherever you search, and it's a great film to watch with the kids to kind of introduce some of these concepts and see some role models.
And that also can be found on your website too, correct?
Yes, oh, definitely.
EyeToEye.org.
Yep. EyeToEyeNational.org.
EyeToEyeNational.org. You mentioned before about college. A lot of people find that college can be a time of reinvention. A freedom, a rite of passage, mm-hmm. So many different things. But for a person with a disability, learning disability, visual impairment, hearing impairment, whatever the case may be, it can be really daunting. What was your experience like?
Yeah, I mean, I think the beginning was I'm no longer LD. Like, I made it to college. I no longer have a learning disability. I'm now, like, successful. It's over. You know, that was, like, kind of the first feeling. And because you'd made it to college and you wanted to leave that piece of you behind and leave that back at home. And so at first, a lot of students go through this cycle of not asking for supports, not asking for accommodations, not going to the disability service office.
And it feels good, whether it's warranted or not.
Right. It feels this sense of independence. And you don't have, if you're, away from home, you don't have mom going, hey, don't forget to do this and all that, if you're lucky enough to have that. And so they are actually a really kind of crazy statistic that 90% of students with learning disabilities will use their accommodations in K-12, and only 17% will use them in a two-year or four-year college. And what we see that at Eye to Eye is that is students really kind of buying into this idea that it's gone, I don't need these supports anymore, and not having the nurturing support of somebody who's there advocating for them. And that's one of the real cornerstones of why we focus on advocacy so much, because we just see so many students kind of dropping off in those college years.
And what are the inspiring words to students to say, listen, disability services are there, use them, or use the services of Eye to Eye?
Exactly. Get that. I always say to parents, like, when you're taking that college tour, that office better be on the tour,
And, great point. Yeah, sure.
It better not just be like the frat parties and the quad.
And a t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. And a good hoodie. So I think that's got to be a big part of it. Yeah.
Was there ever a part of you that said, I could use additional help, but I don't want to because I want to feel like I can shed that part of me and leave that part of me behind?
Yeah, definitely. There was a feeling that of an admittance of a problem when you ask for help. I think that's fundamental to any kind of person who might be struggling with anything. And luckily, I had a couple really awesome people come along in college and kind of normalize the experience for myself, and made it a lot easier for me to embrace things like audiobooks, embrace things like extended time that really supported my learning and saw them as leveling the playing field and saw it as an equity issue and not some kind of cheating or some kind of thing of that nature.
I mentioned before, of course, you were in a studio where we're talking about Bebe Rexha and about putting your label, your experience out there for the public. And for myself, and like you, it's safe to say we have an invisible disability. Whether you have ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, whatever the case may be, it's not abundantly apparent that you have a disability. So for myself, and I really don't think I have a disability. I don't feel disabled. I'm just Mark Farrell, and that's fine with me. I do things differently, and I openly discuss that. Do I test differently on the acuity chart? Absolutely. Do I wear incredibly funky glasses to drive like a surgeon? Absolutely. So if that makes me disabled, then I'm disabled. But the reality is, when we have these conditions, when we're younger, we can't be expected to be a self-advocate and to tote around and say, listen, people with visual impairments or people with ADD or ADHD, et cetera, require X, Y, and Z. But now, obviously, you've been a professional. You've been a teacher in middle school for years. You're the president of Eye to Eye, an incredible national organization. Now this is your platform. This is your benchmark to do this. And how does that make you feel?
I mean, it's a great responsibility. Eye to Eye and myself and others get to speak on behalf of a lot of kids and a lot of their experience. And so I take this seriously. And I also feel really privileged to be able to do it. There was not the role models. There was not people talking about this when I was coming up. And so to be able to be given a platform, be able to be on your show this morning here in New York is just really exciting to speak, because there are so many people probably listening right now who are like, man, that was me, or man, that's my kid. This is one of those issues that everybody knows somebody. And if they can't relate maybe necessarily to a learning disability specifically, they've had some other kind of difference. I mean, disability is the only minority group you can join at any point in your life. And I think...
And we're all going to be part of it.
Yeah, eventually we all kind of join.
We all do.
Yeah. Different levels and different time points, but it does happen for us. It's a real great honor.
What would you say to parents who are listening, who have a child with a disability, whether it's ADD, ADHD, or dyslexia, their role, their duty, and in terms of coddling as well, because, the newest term is, as you know, as a former teacher, bulldozers. We had the helicopter parents. Yeah. Let's clear out any bump in the road. So kids will not have any resiliency skills, which I give a whole talk about overcoming adversity and establishing resiliency and how to become more stronger in this world, because life is tough. Life is about pain. But, you know, the thing is, you don't have to suffer.
Right.
There's so many people out there. So what would you say to parents? Obviously, eye to eye is a vital resource and component. But in terms of their actions and to treat their child, how they would treat their child like their other children or not.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, first off, I would say you got to talk about this stuff. You can't shy away from it, you know. And I think I've had a lot of parents say to me, like, I just don't know how to have this conversation. I don't know how to engage my child. And you just have to try and do it early on. You know, this is a part of their identity and who they are as a human being. So I think that's a huge component of it. But you also don't want it to be some kind of a crutch. You know, you don't want it to be something that they can say, oh, well, I can't do it because I'm dyslexic, or I can't do it because I have an auditory processing issue, or whatever the learning issue might be. That resiliency that you speak of is so, so vital. And I would say if anything, if my LD gave me any kind of gift, it was the gift of being able to work really hard and be
able to. That's the gift of disability.
Yeah, to be able to, absolutely, to be able to hit the wall and be able to know I can go over it and have a few tools in my tool belt to be able to get me over it.
And survive when you hit it again.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, like, you know, there's a little bit, you know, the struggle is real, definitely, you know, and the struggle is real. But I think that, like, embracing a little bit of the struggle, having conversations about it, not shying away from it. But, you know, understanding that there are accommodations, there are supports, there are things out there to help kind of level the playing field for these students.
And understand the pitfalls of enabling someone. You're not going to do your child any service or good by enabling them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember I had a mom at a talk I was giving. I was at Purdue University and speaking, and this mom came up to me at the end, and she goes, you know, I have to say I loved your talk, but I'm really proud to say that my child never knew he had a learning disability until he went to college or something. And I was like, you mean a fundamental aspect of his identity you hid from him? You know, I don't think this is something that to be celebrating. And it was, you know, I also don't think you were listening to my speech either. But that's another thing. But, you know, I think that, like, it's really fascinating to me when people what in life that we struggle with by not talking about it, it's gotten better. I just can't think of any.
I can't say enough and put enough boldness and underscoring the importance of having dialogue. I mean, my wife and I had that conversation again, which I even hate thinking about, you know, strangers and personal zones with my kids. And we actually even had to take it a step further, you know, like the people that you know. Do you think we want to have a talk like that? Do you think any parent does? No. But guess what? My kids will be stronger for this. Yeah. I mean, you know, you have to do this.
Yeah, no, it doesn't go away. I mean, I am often start. I don't know if you know the app Grammarly, but Grammarly is this, like, it helps with your spelling and your grammar and all these different types of things. Great, great app for any my fellow dyslexics out there. But every 2 weeks, it sends you a report card and on how you're doing in terms of your grammar and your spelling.
I love it.
And my Grammarly report card that I get every 2 weeks looks exactly like my IEP, my individual ed plan as a kid. It's unbelievable. So it's it literally is, you know, it says, oh, really? Like, really great vocabulary, lots of unique words, high percentile in that area.
Ding, ding.
Tons and tons of errors, major low percentile in terms of spelling. You know, it's just really amazing. It looks identical to it. And I just see, like, wow, there's so much similarity in this. And the more knowledge I had as a kid on my issues and on my struggles, and the more knowledge that the kids around the country have, the better you are prepared to be a successful adult.
And Marcus Sutcher, no one wants to be disabled, but there's never been a better time. Right? I mean,
yeah.
Think of the app you just talked about.
It's very, very true. I mean, I have in my office, I have the tape recorder that I was given when I was a kid, and it's weighed about 20 pounds.
Love it.
It was about a foot and a half by a foot and a half, and I was told to carry that around and to listen to my books, and it was slightly stigmatizing, I will say.
Well, guess what? I wish I would have known that, because I would have asked you and invited you to bring that along with you today, because I would have brought in my 11.5-pound large print dictionary from the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, who said this will revolutionize your life, and that stigmatized me.
Yeah.
Welcome, right? Those are the lives we lead.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Guess what? Now that's a great prop when I give talks, and for yourself as well.
Yeah, definitely. And now it's all in my phone, and now things like podcasts and radios and things like that, you know, learning with your ears is chic, and it's cool now. And so finally it's coming around that, you know, we're actually using the printed word less, and we're doing more speaking into our devices. We're doing more listening to our devices.
As someone with an ADD, you don't like the word, diagnose. Do you find that that is something that's going to make someone's condition improved or not by having all these assistive technology devices. But I guess it's per case situation.
Yeah, it's case by case. But I do think that most of the issues that the kids are struggling with in these situations are executive functioning issues. You know, it's the kid who shows up with no pencil every single day to school and drives the teacher crazy. It's the kid who, you know, forgets his, you know, goes through like 20 jackets because they lose their jacket every time they leave the house. So I think having some technology there to help you keep you organized, to help, you know, kind of give you a little bit more structure, that can be really huge and really, really impactful. And for many kids, you know, it's utilizing medication as the way that's their accommodation. That's what helps support their ability to do these things. So I think seeing all those things as accommodations, as support mechanisms,
as well as a good insurance plan for your phone.
Yes, exactly.
Did medication help you?
It's hard to say. You know, it was one of those things where you know, you look back, and I don't think I would have gotten through school. I think I would have got a lot more trouble. I would have been in a little more difficult situation. But when the environment changed, when I went to college and I didn't have to sit still for 8 hours, and you know, you had 2 hours of class and then 4 hour break and then another 2 hours of class, it just, that accommodation wasn't necessary anymore. That support wasn't helpful. So I think as long as the environment calls for it, it can be incredibly helpful.
And being diagnosed, or the proper treatment, or seeing a professional for a dyslexia or ADD or ADHD, what advice do you give, and is there information on the site Eye to Eye?
So the best advice for getting identified, first I would go to understood.org if I was a parent, to look for resources there in terms of just straight knowledge. But in terms of getting identified formally, you're going to have to advocate for this in many situations in your school. A lot of schools are not going to push for these kinds of diagnosis because it costs the school a lot of money to serve these students. So you're going to want to talk to, you know, your physician. You're going to want to talk to a mental health expert to really look in to see if there is a, you know, a need to get a formal identification for your child. Because, you know, right now we've got 2.4 million kids in our public school system with an identified label. But what the research is showing us is it's more like 1 in 5 of the students in our school system. And that's a much bigger number. And that gap will be closed by parents advocating for their kids, by teachers advocating for their students.
And lastly, Marcus Sucho, we only have a few seconds, if you can keep this on the short side. Do you think our nation does enough for students with disabilities?
I know. I think we're perpetuating a lot of the stigmas on a constant basis for these students. And I think that we need to raise the bar. We need to look at these students as some of the great problem solvers, the people who are really going to make a real difference in our society. And that, yeah, we might need to invest a little bit more in them, but that investment's really going to pay off in our future.
Fantastic. Marcus Sucho, president of Eye to Eye, thank you so much. You're a shining example of what hard work, resilience can do, and sticking with it. And thank you so much for your time. And for
thank
everyone
so
in Eye to Eye, I mean, a shining example, beacons of hope, that an organization can exist of persons with disabilities, and every workplace should be the same, you know, inclusion at its best.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
And the website, once again, Marcus?
Yes, eyetoeyenational.org. And follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well.
EYE2EYENational.org. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much. Check me out each and every Thursday right here. Gary Knowles next, the founder of PRN. Have a great Passover. Have a great Easter. Talk to you soon. Enjoy.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kid's school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.